Hello, everyone. Welcome to DEEB. My name is Sherry Jones. I'm with the Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Ryan Wilson with Wilson Architects.
Dan Weisner, Songbird Homes.
Mike Odrin, McKay Sposito.
Eric Alimo, SGA Engineering.
Megan Fletcher, Community Development.
Shannon Nash, Development.
Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering.
Brent Davis, Community Development.
Houston Ajo, Ajo Construction.
Brittany Salter, Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Naomi Padiwanla, Development Engineering.
Rod Swanson, Clark County Public Works.
Online.
Brian Cassidy, Eleth Center.
Diana Nutt, Development Engineering.
Seth Holling with AKS Engineering.
I don't know if you got Jeff Riston, Kingston Homes. I spoke over Brian, I think.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramis.
Justin Wood, Clark County Association of Realtors.
All right, thank you, everyone. As a reminder, the DEEB meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted on DEEB's website. First thing on the agenda, did everyone have a chance to review the minutes from last month?
Madam Chair, I did and have no corrections, so I would move for approval.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Megan, upcoming events.
Okay, so per the website, when the agenda was filled out, the only two hearings that I was able to have agenda items on is for the Planning Commission, and they are both work sessions. One is on May 2nd at 5:30 regarding SEPA overview and scoping with Jose Alvarez and Jenna Kay. And on May 16th at 5:30, going over House Bill 1181 and climate change element updates. I also just had a couple of other announcements. Permit Center has been moved to the third floor. And that we had discussed in the last meeting regarding structural review timeframes, and that Council has approved the RFP that we have now with West Coast Code Consulting for a three-year deal with them. So we are using them for structural review.
I think there's a hearing on May 7th, I believe, for the planning assumptions for the comp plan.
They have council meetings on the calendar, but there was no agenda items.
Oh, no
attached.
Agenda. Okay.
Yeah. So council has meetings on May 1st at 1, May 7th at 10, May 21st at 6, May 28th at 10, and June 4th at 10. But no agendas were at the time within 2 days ago.
Yeah, I'm not positive. I just had it on my calendar. So it's probably, I think it is.
I have it on my calendar, too. So I think that's what that is.
Yeah, council did schedule that hearing for that date. There was some question as to the notification requirements and whether that date could be met, but I haven't heard any decision on that.
And Megan, with regards to the Permit Center, I'm to understand by the sign downstairs that there are no longer walk-ins and everything is by appointment only?
Correct. There hasn't been walk-ins for quite a while.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That was going to be my next question.
Yes. So
have people actually still been coming into the permit center?
No. I mean, if payments have to be made, they are open till, I believe, from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. for payments to be made at the window. But any type of intake, Q&A, has to be done by appointment only.
Okay. Can you make payments at any time?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any member announcements?
Maybe a suggested agenda item for some time, maybe not even this month, but just the road mod committee. I know we've talked about that. It's on our work plan. Just had something come up on another one. It was small. We don't even usually take these, but it was a few projects together, two lot short plat, and there was a proportionality, and it was something like $300,000 in improvements, and it was denied. So basically, if to do $300,000 improvements for a lot that's worth $150,000, and it was found to not be disproportional. So I would like to maybe visit with the road mod committee. And I found some stuff in my old notes too about a proportionality study that Deeb did years ago. And they went through a bunch of numbers. So it might be that just a lot of time has passed and maybe county staff doesn't even know of the work that was done back in like 2007, 8, 9. So, but that could be something that we could look at and maybe invite the road mod committee or who's that running to kind of talk about their process. And maybe we could assist with kind of refining the process and making it consistent and efficient. So,
yeah, I remember that there was actually a document, a policy document that came out regarding proportionality and how to meet that threshold. Was that ever employed in yours?
It was actually a resolution.
Oh, right. It was a resolution.
So I'm guessing that it's just been so much time that it just kind of fell off. But do you know anything? I copied you on that email, and I kind of brought it back up. And I actually have a whole stack of information on it when we were going through it.
Yeah, I don't. That's primarily Public Works and Development Engineering.
So do you have that resolution that you can send out? I know I have a copy of it, but
I have a copy of it. Maybe we can before the next when we do bring it on the agenda.
Perfect.
But I can send it out too.
Great. Thank you. I think everybody should have a copy of that, including staff.
Yeah. Eric, that's probably a good idea, especially in light of the Sheets decision that just came out from the United States Supreme Court as well.
Yeah, I actually added that to my packet of disproportionality stuff. So, I will send that out. And I do have literally there's a whole stack of the stuff we went through. It might be too much, but if anyone needs it, it wasn't really even public information. It was our work stuff that we did with staff. Steve Schulte was really involved in it. I was on the committee with him. I'm not sure. Someone else, probably a few other people were too. But interesting stuff. A lot of work went into it.
Any other member announcements?
I guess I have one item. With regard to those resolutions, it seems like there's been a few of those items that have come up over the years, and it doesn't seem like there's a central place that's easy for people to find them without, learning about them, say, after they've submitted a road modification request. So I was wondering if there's a way similar to the way that some of the stormwater policies are published on the website, if there'd be a way that some of these resolutions or other policies could be available on the website.
All right, anyone else?
This is Brian. I have to announce that unfortunately, I think this is going to be my last meeting as your public sector representative. I fortunately had a short run here, but I have announced that my last day with the City of La Center will be the 31st of this month, and my family and I are moving to Puerto Rico for a few years for a new adventure, and I'm going to be doing some consulting work, but not as a public sector official. So, I think that means that you'll need to be seeking another one, and I will turn in my official resignation here. But it's been a pleasure to work with you for this short time, and hope to continue to work with you all here in the future.
Thanks, Brian. Do you have any idea or any recommendations for your replacement?
Well, my replacement here at the City of La Center is going to be Tracy Coleman, who formerly worked for the City of Woodland. So I can see if she's interested in taking my spot. If not, I can rack my brain a little bit and see if I can convince any of my other former associates and the government entities to take my spot here.
We probably just want to know what their level of interest would be. It'd be the, I think we appoint, correct me if I'm wrong, no?
No, they have to, they post it and then they have to apply and go through the process.
Okay.
I think we recommend, but the council decides.
We have.
What was that? Who's that?
It's Terry Wallum.
Oh, hi, Terry.
I know that Les McDonald of Clark Regional Wastewater was someone who threw his hat in the ring, and that's someone who we could go to for that potential spot.
Okay. Well, Brian, I'm sorry to see you go.
Thank you. Yep.
Sounds like a great adventure. Sounds like a great adventure. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, have a good time there and enjoy. A little jealous. That sounds like it's a fun adventure.
All right. Any other member announcements? Okay. Jamie, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Jamie,
cap number. Yeah, no, it's just trying to come off mute there. Okay, so we've got a variety of bills this year, sort of in the land use realm that I kind of picked that I think are kind of important. Some of them are more planning related. Some of them are more law related. Some of them are more architect and building design related. And you guys have got copies of all of them. And so what I kind of hope to do is just kind of briefly touch on them, give a brief summary as best as I understand them, answer whatever questions I can answer. But, you know, I expect everybody's going to be digesting these for their own viewpoints. The first one is House Bill 1589. This is the utility decarbonization bill that was pretty controversial, that Puget Sound Energy was pushing, that would essentially try to wean the Puget Sound area off of natural gas. It's actually being challenged by a proposed initiative or referendum. And it's my understanding that the ballot title for that may be under challenge right now. So this is just something more to keep aware of. I know it doesn't really have any direct applicability to Southwest Washington at this point, but I think it's sort of a like a long-term view of where maybe the state of Washington is going with the natural gas industry. And the bill was crafted in a manner that I think tries to make it survive the legal challenges that have thus far been prevented in the city of Eugene and city of Berkeley down in California. So just kind of a heads up to pay attention to. The next bill I wanted to talk about is House Bill 2039. This is more for the lawyers in the room. What this would do is it allows for direct appeals of clean energy projects to go from the Pollution Control Hearings Board to the Court of Appeals under motion. I don't think we have too many of those in the Clark County area, but it is nonetheless, that's what sort of the impetus of the bill. An amendment to the LUPA statute. And this was something that I think a lot of land use practitioners throughout the state experienced problems with during the pandemic and trying to serve local government when their auditor's offices were closed. And yet the statute requires you to serve the auditor directly, and like how can you do that within a timely period when the auditor doesn't show up to the office? So RCW 3670C0405 has been amended, and it allows those trying to serve a LUPA petition to leave a copy of the petition at the office of the person who is designated, or by whoever the local jurisdiction designates for service, and service is effective upon delivery. So this is a really, really big thing for those that are appealing land use decisions to court on, and it's going to be a major change to LUPA process. The next bill to talk about is House Bill 2071. This is related to residential housing regulations, and this would require that the state have two technical advisory committees established through the State Building Code Council to try to find amendments to the State Building Code to make it more likely that residential housing will be built. So while it doesn't have any direct applicability to code right now, I think that this potentially could be a vehicle in the future for significant changes to the State Building Code once that task force gets created and we start seeing new regulations there. The next bill is House Bill 2296. This one does have direct applicability to Clark County. This is the bill that extends the comp plan period by 6 months for those certain GMA jurisdictions, including Clark County. So instead of our deadline being June of 2025, it'll be the end of December of 2025. And that's also important because that would be the additional 6 months that the jurisdictions that are required to do the middle housing would also have an extension from that, because the middle housing regulations are set off from the adoption of the next plan. House Bill 2321. This is a bill that modifies the middle housing requirements and changes the definition of transit stop to make it a little bit more clear in terms of where a transit stop is related to, you know, where you could get that additional density from the four units to the six units. The other interesting thing, and I know it doesn't have direct applicability to Clark County, but it would to the city of Vancouver and the other cities that are required to do middle housing. It's that a city may not require more than one off-street parking per unit of middle housing if the lots are exactly 6,000 square feet. And it also has some limitations on critical areas. And so I think it's something to pay attention to. I know obviously we're still working towards the middle housing regulations, but it's it'll be something that'll have to go into effect later down the road. The next bill to talk about is 5792. This one is really, I think, more for the architects and planners. It changes the definition of a multi-unit residential building, and it basically excludes from the definition multifamily residential buildings that are units of 12 or fewer units that are no more than three stories and have one of the stories dedicated to retail or parking. And what you get the exclusion from is certain enclosure and design requirements, as well as inspections. And so I think that's something really for the people designing buildings and maybe how to put them on the properties to look at a little bit more carefully. The next bill is Senate Bill 5834. This is what I think I affectionately call the urban growth area land swap bill. And so what this would do is if there was a certain area of an urban growth area that's getting more development pressure because of that. That's just where the population is going or where the urban services are. It would allow a jurisdiction that qualifies to take out urban growth area land in an area that is, you know, has less development pressure, basically swap it for land that has more development pressure. This was really important to some of the Puget Sound jurisdictions that some of the counties and cities up there were seeing development just sort of naturally occur in one direction and not the other. And this allowed them to do that swap and focus in on that. I don't know whether or not that'll come up during this comp plan process here in the county, but it would certainly potentially be a tool. We've never had that before.
Hey, Jamie, for a question about that. Jamie?
Sure. Yeah.
So does that mean that lands within the UGB, lands that border the UGB but are outside of the UGB could petition to be included in the UGB as a swap for land that might be similarly owned to be pulled out of the UGB?
Yeah, that's what it does.
But is there any consideration then to, do they indicate that what kind of process that would be? Because then there would have to be some kind of a zoning designation placed on it. They would look at urban services and things like that as well.
Yeah, I think hypothetically, let's use an example in Clark County, for instance. The county development pattern is naturally occurring up the I-5 corridor towards Bryan's Fair City of La Center. The possibility would be to include rural land in that area into a UGB, but taking out urban land out of an area in somewhere in the county that is having less development pressure.
Okay, so that's kind of exactly what it sounds like. That should be an interesting little. So is there a process for that? Does each jurisdiction have to come up with a process for that?
Well, it would be jurisdiction specific. They can make their own findings and go through their own legislative process as they would through their normal periodic planning update. They could also do an amendment, I believe, once a year, but they would have to make those specific findings.
Would it just be the jurisdiction that would be able to do that? Would it be individual landowners that could petition for that?
My understanding the government would have to do it, but I'm assuming that landowners could make the petition, but ultimately it would be the local government that have to make that process.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, moving on, Senate Bill 5885. This is an annexation procedure bill, and it basically requires or allows a city or town to file one single certificate, and it requires them to post it at the Office of Fiscal Management online. This is in result to some court cases that have been out there challenging the adequacy of annexation petitions, but this sort of just cleans up that case law, makes it really specific. It should be able to speed up, theoretically, the annexation process, which is good for those areas that we're trying to urbanize, that are in urban holding, for instance. The next bill is 6015. This is a residential parking configuration bill, and I wanted to pull up exactly what this does. It was a bit confusing to me. This one requires that that the cities that are will be required to in middle housing that are required to under GMA to require off-street parking as a condition of permitting and development of middle housing. So they can't require it within as a condition of permitting a middle housing with 1.5 mile walking distance of a major transit stop. They may not require more than one off-street parking space per unit as a condition of permitting of development on lots smaller than 6,000 square feet. And they may not require two off-street parking spaces per unit as a condition of permitting middle housing units of greater than 6,000 square feet. It also says that a county or city cannot require off-street parking if compliance with a tree retention ordinance would be impossible for a residential or redevelopment of that parcel. So this is one to pay attention to land use planners.
Yeah, when I read this the first time, I kind of scratched my head at, I'm often curious as to why these sorts of things come up. You know, for instance, they said parking shall not exceed 8 feet by 20 feet. And I think I would argue that 8 feet as a maximum size is too narrow. And that maybe some of the people that write these need to go to Land Use 101. Does this mean that now all of the jurisdictions, cities and counties that are subject to this, do they have to rewrite their code now to conform to it?
Yes.
So you're right now, so it's saying 9 by 20.
I don't think it's saying that you have to build it to 8 by 20. It's just saying that the jurisdiction can't require more than
okay. All right.
I wonder how this impacts the middle housing that was just passed for the narrow lots that require off-street parking, I think, for every like 2.5 units or something. I don't know if that would comply with this.
Well, then you have the city of Camas that any lot that's under 7,400 square feet, for every 5 of those lots, you have to have another off-street parking stall.
Yeah.
Which is every, I mean, there's all kinds of off-street parking like that required in the city of Camas for any lots under 7,400, and now they're saying anything under 6,000.
So I haven't read this one carefully, but I remember looking at it back during the session, and I think there's a couple things. I think that the definition of transit stop is actually pretty big. So I'm not sure that Clark County has anything that meets the definition of a transit stop and that. But it could eventually, especially as the Vine routes get extended up into Clark County.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really only, I mean, you still have to be within 1,000 feet of a transit stop. So it's really only going to affect projects probably along Highway 99. Immediately.
Okay.
It seems like some of these are with transit stops, and some of them apply regardless.
No, it says the provision in subsection 1 of this section shall not apply to portions of cities shall not apply to portions of cities within a 1 mile radius of a commercial airport. Commercial airport. No, wait a minute. Existing. Where's the transit stop bit? So where's?
Yeah, where's it say it's just in transit stops?
Yeah, I don't see the transit stops.
I think it's everywhere.
I think it's everywhere, too.
There's duplicate language, however, in 2321.
Oh, really?
They talk about parking as well within transit stops. So I think there might be two bills that kind of work together, and some of it's duplicate.
Okay.
But I remember flagging some stuff in 2321.
You guys familiar with this?
Hmm.
Might need to get familiar with it.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up on this one a little bit more.
Wow. Okay, well, that's going to the top of the list. Thanks, Jamie. That was enough. I think that was all we had.
Okay. Just two more bills.
Two more bills.
6140. This was the Lammerd fix. We don't call them Lammerd, which means local area, more intensive rural development. We call them rural centers in Clark County. But this basically says you can have a development now of an existing footprint to do a remodel if it's between 5,000 but no more than 10,000 square feet, and a new retail development of 2,500 but not exceeding 10,000 square feet in rural areas, provided it's more than 10 miles away from an urban growth area, and is there to serve the rural population. And this fixes some bad legislation that occurred a couple of years ago that seemed to limit these rural centers from their ability to continue to allow development to occur and serve the rural populations. And so this is a real good bill in terms of fixing that prior bad language. And then the last bill to talk about is another sort of state building code council bill. That is 6291. And it streamlines the state building code council's operating procedures in terms of development of new and better regulations. Again, I think that the main aspect of this is they were trying to find ways to allow this middle housing bill to succeed and try to figure out things that are sort of blocking it. And hopefully this amendment to the procedures will do that. So with that, those are kind of all the bills that I saw of any importance that wanted to touch on, and I'll shut up.
I think we may have lost audio here online at least.
Ryan, can you hear me now? I think we'll have to confirm that.
Yeah, that's better.
We'll just pass the phone.
We've done that.
It's intermittent.
Put them over by you.
Perfect. Now we have an echo. Okay, are we still echoing? You're good. It's when you talk into the phone.
Can you hear me, Brian?
I can hear now, yes.
I think I'm hearing out too.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I just turned your phone. There I am. Nope. Okay. Any more discussion on those topics?
No.
No more talking on this end. Maybe I'll turn it back over to Jamie for an update on condos, so we're not echoing.
Yeah, sorry, I just fired my mute button. So on the condos issue, we had a interesting discussion with Justin, who's in the room. And Sherry, myself, and one of the lobbyists for Schwabka, and Maren Calvert at the Schwabi firm. And I think in terms of, you know, again, trying to help the middle housing situation, one of the things that's come up is the possibility of doing condo development as a means to sort of expedite processes. And one of the amendments that had happened to state law several years ago that I don't think has really been implemented down in, I think it's in the city of Vancouver's code, but I'm not sure it's in the other codes of the other jurisdictions down here. But specifically, the statute exempts residential condo development from the planning requirements if you do a binding site plan. And so it may be a means to expedite the development of condo regulations, not requiring those to go through a plat or short plat process for those condo type projects that are more horizontal in nature, not necessarily the vertical kind that we think of tall buildings as. And there's a variety of jurisdictions up in the Puget Sound area that were kind of getting their codes on how they've implemented this and been successful of this since the change in state law. And we wanted to bring this to Deeb's attention and possibility to the attention of the other municipalities here in the county as a potential means to get housing out there in a more expedited fashion. I know it doesn't address necessarily the main concern, which is the construction defect litigation and the insurance requirements, but if a binding site plan process could expedite housing, you know, there may be some utility in at least getting that into the codes as a potential to use it as, you know, hopefully the aspect of the construction defect and condo litigation gets resolved through the legislative efforts in the coming years. So I wanted to throw that out for discussion.
We've done this before. This is a pain.
Jamie, Eric was mentioning how that finding site plan process might be one option for that. Maybe not as far as vertical construction, but horizontal, like in cottage housing. But that would require a change to RCW 57, I think it's 17 or 18, because the binding site plan option is only available to commercially and industrially zoned properties. So how would that work in that regard? You'd have to change that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the statute says you are exempt if you do a development under the Condo Act of Washington. So regardless of zoning, as far as I understand it, as long as you're doing a development under the Condominium Act, you might be exempt from the platting requirements. But I think that's a good point, Mike. And you know, certainly we could pass that along to Association of Washington Business and BIW and the Washington Realtors Association as a good legislative amendment to clarify.
I think there might be, though, it would have to be narrowly defined with some very close bookends, because I could see then other, the potential for people trying to take advantage of that and trying to skirt the platting process for other purposes that it wasn't intended for originally.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good thought, but I also think obviously we've set a very lofty goal in terms of, you know, putting housing out there into the marketplace, and condos may be one very good tool in the middle housing to do that. But if you're going to require, you know, people to go through short platting, it just may not be very cost effective from a time and money standpoint. And so this, the thought being that this doing, you know, a condo through a binding site plan may be a quicker, more expedited method of getting the housing delivered.
I could see that having done both, you know, planning and binding site plans, that would be fine. One other consideration, though, is that it's been my experience that banks look at lending on lots created via binding site plan a little differently than they do from a platting standpoint, and that there's some maybe some lending considerations there that could be effective. I see Sherry nodding her head. Anyway.
Up a little bit in our conversation yesterday about, we have clear language, we would really need to talk with title companies, we would need to look kind of on the real estate side, on the lending side, how that would all be impacted.
It's back to you. I don't know what to say.
Any other discussion questions? So where we left it on our call yesterday for condos was to kind of talk with this group about the binding site plans, kind of work through that at the local level. And then at the same time, we have lobbyists that will be working at the state level on some really specific things to, we're looking at it take bite-sized chunks. And if we frame it in the context of this middle housing issue that we're having, and that the condo code's being applied maybe in a way that it wasn't intended to, then that'll be the way to kind of take bite-sized chunks out of the condo legislation. Because it's a big animal that's kind of a losing battle. But if we can take some bites out of it, then we will.
I remember you guys said, so when you think 15, 17, respond or discuss his final sentiments. And that there would need to be legislative updates to that section or in order to include residential.
Great feedback. Thank you. So we'll keep doing the work on our end. And then once we come up with some options, then I think the goal would be to convene a group locally to really dive into it, make sure we've thought it through clearly, and then we can do some education around it.
Hi, this is Terry Wallum. I just wanted to add in real quickly about the property tax exemption and that being a tool that could also help on the affordability side. I just didn't want to lose sight of that being something that could also be discussed.
Thanks, Terry. I added it to my notes for things for us to look into. Flying through our agenda. April's not here to provide an update after the permitting discussion that we had. Do any D members want to tackle that, or we just wait for April? April, after Andrew and Ryan had given their presentation on kind of the process, she had some follow-up items that she was going to take back to her team. I think the last thing was to give Brittany a second to introduce herself.
Yeah, and I guess I'll just start. I'm Dave Howe with Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. Good to see you guys. I am excited to introduce Brittany Salter, who is our first land use lead for Department of Fish and Wildlife. She's going to be helping local governments with the long-range planning process, providing any support for any governments that need it here down in Southwest Washington. She comes to us with some planning background. She helped us do some of our initial planning triage work on our team here when she started with us as our Bio2. And now she's our environmental planner. And we're super excited to have her on board. So you're probably going to see her here in these meetings, trying to get familiar with some of the county issues and learn the lingo a little bit so that she can best support what the county needs through some of the long-range planning processes. So, Brittany, did you want to say anything?
Nope. I think Dave said it well enough, and the echoing bothers me. I'm sure it bothers everyone else. So I'm just happy to be here, and I'm really just going to be listening a lot and learning. So thank you.
Okay, that was it for our agenda.
Is there any public comments?
Okay,
with that, we'll adjourn.
Thanks, everyone.
Awesome. Thank you all.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.